Mr. Andrew.
Yes, sir. May it please the court. This case involves a motion for summary judgment depriving my clients of a jury decision where there were various different versions of material facts that were submitted. Initially, one of the issues was a question of sexual harassment. We characterize this sexual harassment case as closer to a case of stalking than any other type of genre of sexual harassment that could be done. But the court characterized it as though it was a question of whether my client was subjected to groping or foul language.
Well, really, what, Mr. Andrew, is your best evidence that Rodowell's actions toward Ms. Nussi were severe or pervasive? I mean, in claims of a hostile environment, we usually see a lot more than a few questionable looks or showing up unannounced.
Well, again, we had much more than a few questionable looks. This began the stalking in fall of 2005, where she was subjected to constant. She had to be in meetings with Mr. Rodowell. He was a member of the board who decided whether she was hired or fired or whether she got salary increases. And as a result of her duties, she had to spend extended time with him alone. And during these periods, he gazed and stared at her. He, in fact, there's a report that between late fall of 2005 till January 24, 2006, these types of leers and stares took place between 10 to 12 times. Then we have the two incidents, the only incidents that the court really focused on, and that was the January 24th incident where he ran after her, and also the January 26th incident at Levasseur School. But it doesn't stop there. In addition to the fact that my client had to deal with this board member at school, he also was a member of her church. He also was in a social setting. It's a small town area. And even after my client finally did complain, and she only did that after consulting a number of her confidants, and including the social worker for the school who gave her information to watch out for this guy. Even after that, and even after an investigation, and we would contend a very cursory examination, even after this investigation, after he was told at the beginning of this investigation not to go to the school, even though his wife worked there, he still went to the school 10 to 12 times, and even after specifically being told, despite the fact that his wife worked there, to stay away, he went to the school 3 or 4 times, didn't even sign in, and still was trying to make contact with my client. We have a situation where there's ongoing exposure of this man to my client, not physical exposure, but he was in contact with her over and over and over and over again. This was not a two-incident case, as the judge tried to make it to be. In addition, it caused severe emotional strains on my client as a result of this, ultimately resulting in her leaving the school even though she had gotten salary increases. So it's not a situation where we just have two distinct incidents, the January incidents, and it's not a situation where the proper legal analysis is to compare her to persons using foul language and persons using, groping or whatever. This is a situation where the more appropriate term is pervasive. Constantly my client had to put up with this man's exposure, ogling, his treatment of her, calling her Deb as though he's familiar with her, asking her what's going on between us, how are we, when there is no us and there is no we. My client's happily married and wasn't looking for any kind of relationship with him. It's interesting that the judge in the case talked about the employer being able to have safe harbor so that certain conduct on the part of the person accused of sexual harassment can be safe. My concern would be more, what safe harbor did my client have? How could she get away from this person who was her superior? So we feel that in terms of the sexual harassment case, although you certainly can make arguments, as counsel did, that these should have been interpreted innocently, those are the types of things that should go before a jury. So a jury could make a determination as to what should properly be done. It shouldn't have been decided on a motion for summary judgment, especially where the inferences, the reasonable inferences to be drawn on a motion for summary judgment, and the facts are to be interpreted in favor of the non-movement, which is my client. With regard to the retaliation issue, after my client made verbal complaints to Mr. DeJuan, the superintendent, then he began to complain about her in a way he never did before. She was too aloof. A board member, Rodewald, the person who was making these advances towards her, said she should loosen up. She shouldn't be that aloof, and it could affect her job, is what she was told, even though she had previously been found never to have a problem in the past. And then also, after this so-called full investigation, which only include the interview of one of my client's five witnesses that she submitted, then there was a taping that was done of my client, and suddenly the tape was erased. It didn't exist anymore. So we have questions to be raised as to why it is that my client received this differential treatment after she complained that she had never experienced before. Again, we feel that those are things that should have been determined by a jury, not on motion for summary judgment, not on the basis of affidavits, paper, and documents, but should have been determined by real live witnesses going before a jury so that they could determine whether it was a sexual harassment or retaliation. The judge on the equal pay claim, what he did was he took my client, he admitted that every male principal made more than my client. But what he tried to argue was, well, they made more because they did more. Well, they're all principals. But most importantly, the person who replaced my client was a male with much less experience, much less seniority, and his starting salary was the same as the salary my client received after 3 years on the job, $73,000. My client, when she was first hired, got only $66,000. So the question becomes, how does this man get this higher salary when he first starts out and my client does not? He had the identical job that my client had. In fact, my client had duties that he didn't have. I can see the light is on, and I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, counsel. Mr. Barasha.
Your Honors, please the court. Counsel, Your Honor, this is not a case relative to the sexual harassment claim in which Plaintiff Newsy's workplace was permeated with discriminatory insult, intimidation, ridicule, or the like. She was subjected to no severe or pervasive conditions which altered the conditions of her work. This case would have profound legal effect if you were to set aside Judge McCuskey's order granting summary judgment. Basically, it would have such profound effect, I believe, that any plaintiff alleging her subjective belief, no matter how well-founded or unfounded, could always state a claim upon which relief could be granted, and could always get to trial based upon elaboration of her subjective beliefs in the absence of any objective basis therefore. In this case, whether Ms. Newsy was subjected to any hostile, abusive work condition, taking into account the totality of the circumstances, the cumulative nature of everything that she alleges, was the frequency, was the severity, was of the action such that it unreasonably interfered with her work performance. And the answer in this case, as Judge McCuskey found, is no. Also, with respect to and I also want to just say, Judge, despite counsel's recitation of the facts, what we had here was basically an employee who based her claim on 10 to 12 instances when she felt that Mr. Rodewald stared or leered at her in a manner that made her feel uncomfortable at Board of Education meetings, at committee meetings, and during her own pre-planning meetings for the Communications Committee. And the board meetings were monthly. The committee meetings were every 6 to 8 weeks. This wasn't, that was the basis. Secondly, on January 24, after the board meeting, he approached her, called her name, and said, where are you going? That's it. The encounter lasted 45 seconds. She said, I have somewhere else to be. The third encounter of January 26 was when she claims he's outside in a dimly lit hall waiting for her without her permission after a communications committee meeting, and he approached her and startled her, which she said made her feel physically threatened. He asked her, how are we? And she said, what do you mean? Motioning with his hands, he said, you and me, how we doing? She also said he raised his hand shoulder level as if she thought to touch her on the shoulder, pat her on the back, or hug her. There was never any physical contact, never any offensive touching here, except on one occasion, according to the plaintiff, when she says that she was touched on the shoulder when Mr. Rodewald tried to get her attention, and she found that to be extremely rude. She didn't believe that Mr. Rodewald would have done that to a male colleague. As to the harassment, as to the retaliation, there is no evidence here of any adverse employment action, let alone any action that a reasonable employee would have considered materially adverse. According to her own testimony, Ms. Nuzzi stated that she didn't think that the board or the district fully investigated her claim, and she didn't think that she was treated legally and respectfully with respect to having made her claim of sexual harassment. She was not threatened with any discharge. Matter of fact, a month after she made her claim, she was given a 4% raise. She wasn't demoted. Didn't suffer any loss in pay, suffered no loss of benefits. There was no adverse employment action here. And I would ask that the court affirm the district court's judgment. As for the Equal Pay Act claims, whether under Title VII or the Equal Pay Act, we set forth all of the bona fide legitimate reasons that it is undisputed Mr. DeJuan took into account. Ms. Nuzzi was the principal of the preschool kindergarten, the smallest school in the district, both in terms of number of students and of certified staff supervised. Her certified staff was roughly half that of the next largest school in the district. She was paid on 10.5 months of her contract, whereas all other superintendents were paid on full 12-month contracts. She was given a raise in each of her years, and again, in early July, she was given a 4% raise, and a month later, because of this outrageous conduct, she submits her resignation. There's no adverse employment action here. There's no Equal Pay Act claim here. It's unreasonable from an objective standpoint to maintain a harassment claim, and it's unreasonable to claim that there's any evidence in this record that the district intended to discriminate against her based on her gender in terms of pay. I want to reserve the rest of the time for Mr. Jeff Taylor, if I could.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Jeff Taylor. I represent Defendant Appellee Rob Rodewall. The issue before this Court as it pertains to Defendant Rob Rodewall is whether the District Court properly granted summary judgment on count four of plaintiff's First Amendment complaint, which alleged or purported to allege a claim that plaintiff's equal protections rights were violated because of alleged acts of sexual harassment by Mr. Rodewall, who is a board member of the district. One of the arguments that has been put forth by the appellant in this case is that the district court has not properly considered all the fact and drew inferences in favor of the defendants as opposed to the plaintiff. I think that is absolutely contrary to the well-written opinion by Judge McCuskey. The only thing I would note, and I heard it again today during oral arguments, is a reference to stalking. I would draw this Court's attention to footnote number 3 in that order, where Judge McCuskey said that there is absolutely zero evidence in the record of this case to support any contention that there was any stalking. And I think it's important to note that the record, it is undisputed that Mr. Rodewall never touched plaintiff in a sexually explicit manner. He never made any sexually explicit statements to Ms. Nuzzi. He never propositioned Ms. Nuzzi for any sexual affairs. Boiled down, what you have here are facts that Mr. Rodewall sat too close to Deborah Nuzzi at committee meetings. He stared at her. He attempted to speak with her after two board meetings. And he visited a school where his wife also worked and for district-related functions. The evidence in this record doesn't show that there was any sexual connotation associated with any of those events. Rather, those are all the subjective interpretations by the plaintiff. What is being proposed to you in this case is that a subjective standard be espoused, that if a plaintiff believes that they're sexually harassed, that's enough to take it to the jury. That's not what this Court says, and that's not what this Court has said in the past. And I reference the Amulsey decision as well as Saxton and the Weiss decision, where this Court has looked at innocuous types of behavior and routinely and consistently held that that type of conduct does not support a claim for sexual harassment. That same line of reasoning applies in the present case here. There is no reasonable facts in the record. There is no facts which a reasonable person could interpret to establish a claim of sexual harassment. And I'd like to take one moment and echo what Mr. Barash has said with respect to a policy decision. With all due respect, if this Court adopts the reasoning that's proffered by the appellant in this case, floodgates are going to be open for sexual harassment claims going to the jury because it's going to be based on one sole question. What did the plaintiff believe? That's not the standard. That's all I have, unless there's any questions from the Court.
Thank you very much, Counsel. Anything further, Mr. Andry?
Yes, sir.
Counsel refers to footnote 3. By the district court judge, where he just summarily determines that there was no stalking in this case. The evidence shows that Mr. Rodewall would park his car right next to my client, conveniently, that he would wait for her in the dark, conveniently, that he would constantly leer at her when they had meetings together, that he asked her questions like, "What's going on between you and me?" These are not things that are just her subjective beliefs. And in fact, I draw your attention to the fact that my client didn't even rely solely on her subjective beliefs. She went and talked to other people because she wanted to be sure that she was getting this right. And so what did she do? She talked to the school social worker who told her that she felt that it could be sexual related, that she should stay away from him. She talked to her assistant superintendent, Kathy Allers. She talked to a number of people. It wasn't just her subjective belief. It was based upon what was taking place. And under Burlington, in a retaliation case, the adverse effect could be something like chilling the ability to make complaints, which is what was taking place here. It doesn't have the same standards for material adverse action as in a discrimination case. For all of these reasons, we ask that the court reverse the determination by the district court, allow my client to have her jury trial because that's all she's asking for, and let the chips fall where they may. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.